listener production.
Hi, this is Paul McIntyre. Welcome to the MI3 Audio Edition. I've been a business journalist for 25 years covering the marketing, media, agency and tech sectors. In this series, we talk to industry leaders about the global and local developments that you need to be across this week.
And just before we get into this week's podcast, we need the next 100 seconds or so of about 2,500 in this episode to make our podcast viable. And it comes via our partner, Mutinex. If you haven't heard of Mutinex and what it's doing with blue chip brands on econometrics and market mix modeling, here's Samsung's head of data, Carl Bunn, explaining in a previous MI3 Market Voice podcast how Samsung uses Mutinex to pick and optimize its media channel mix much faster, efficiently, and effectively. Thanks for staying with us. We'll be back into this week's conversation in just a tick. Samsung in Australia started out maybe 4 years ago with econometrics and market mix modeling. What are some of those near-term insights that you're getting now that you didn't have before?
It's really allowed us to understand the breakdown of what's working and what's not. And so being able to understand what is the channel breakdown, what's the specific ROI of a particular investment that we're making has allowed us to look at certain products and understand that for some products, these products don't necessarily require a large amount of marketing or they require a different investment in marketing.
So there you have it. Thanks for staying with us. To recap, Mutinex is leading next generation market mix modeling with companies like Samsung to optimize its marketing investments, often achieving improvements for many brands of up to 20% after 12 months. To understand more, visit mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co. Well, this might be a canary in the coal mine scenario for companies spending circa $200 billion globally on customer and marketing tech each year, according to Forrester's figures. And there should be an alarm bell or three for boards and company bosses who have bought into the customer experience mantra as a central business strategy. The stampede we've seen by companies to CX and customer-focused tech over the past 5 years, along with the massive investments in specialist teams and resource to make it all work, is overall having no impact on customer experience scores. That's if the data my guest today has on 7 years of CX performance from 12,000 assessments across 200 Australian firms and 8 sectors is any measure. And banking, telco, auto, superannuation and utilities are among the sectors in the crosswinds. CSBA Managing Director Paul van Veenendaal's sobering data and views on customer contact centres may be the canary in the coal mine for those firms heralding their commitment to connecting up and improving the experience across all customer contact points. And what's problematic is that NPS scores, which many leadership teams have linked to their performance and bonuses, can and are being gamed for better but hollow CX benchmarks. So, Paul van Veenendaal, welcome. There are, as always, exceptions, but are we looking at an industry-wide customer experience sinkhole, Paul? Welcome, and fascinating conversation we're about to have, I think.
Yeah, great. Hi, Paul. Yeah, thank you very much for that introduction. As you pointed out, our research has pretty much demonstrated that in the last 7 years, customer experiences have been flat. And we basically have seen that across the sectors we measure, the scores have not really moved. Sure, there's been exceptions, but in reality, not much has moved. We're scoring 200 organizations out of 100 on customer experience. How did I feel when I hung up speaking to that organization? The average score is 50%, or 49.9 to be more precise, okay? That has not moved in the last 7 years.
So this is the basis of our whole conversation today, Paul, is that 49.9% not moving. Perhaps we should just get a little take on your methodology first and how you're doing it. And I think we were talking earlier, Mark Ritson discovered your data and liked it at Melbourne Business School. So there's something in there that must have some robustness to it, Paul. Methodology first anyway.
Yeah, well, the methodology, we keep it quite simple, and I think that's why Mark likes us. It's simple, but it's robust information. What we do is we mystery shop over 200 organizations every day of the week throughout the year. We mystery shop them on a criteria that we spend a lot of time trying to perfect and get right, okay? We assess an interaction across three things. Success, did I get an answer to my question? Ease, how easy was it to have my issue resolved? And sentiment, how well did the agent and the organization listen to me? What we did do is to get that, to work out that methodology, we are assessing effectively, how did I feel when I hung up, when I spoke to that organization, okay? And what am I going to tell my mates about it? Okay, we are measuring the soft issues. We're not measuring, did they give me the right price or something like that? We are measuring, how did I feel when I hung up? And what am I going to tell my friends about it?
And why do those soft issues matter, Paul? Why do those soft issues matter?
They matter because people are ringing up predominantly to get an answer to a question, but also to be able to know what are the next best steps. So a good experience would be, what is the next best step when you are calling them? What should I do? If you do want to, for example, if you do want to come and pay the bill at the counter, come on a Tuesday because the counter, the queues are shorter and the parking's free out front. Okay? I didn't ask for it. That's an unasked question. But boy, I'm going to tell my friends what a good experience that was.
What you're seeing, though, in all that data, is there differences in those three dimensions? Is there some on the up, or it's all pretty much the same line ball?
No, we measure all those three elements, success, ease, and sentiment. And to give you an idea, and they're all out of 100. So ease would go from a score of, say, 27 to 82. Sentiment, similar sort of measures. And success, similar sort of measures. So
that's the band of customer, what your scores are showing. Companies range from 27 to 82.
So the best scores in ease would be around 72%, sentiment 91%, and success 84%. I mean, that's what every CEO's dream should be, to get really good quality scores like that when someone contacts the organization. Not only did I give you an answer, I made it easy, and I listened to you and engaged with you. Down the bottom, we've got organizations that are getting an ease score of 27%, sentiment of 59%, and success of 45%. Can you imagine 45% 45% success rate, which means people are going to ring back again and again?
Not happy Jan.
Not happy Jan.
Yes, there's a few not happy Jans out there. And so, Paul, the implications here, obviously we'll get to what's going on in contact centres, but we talked earlier about, is this a signal of broader enterprise-wide customer experience? And do you think it's showing companies signals on their broader play on this in customer experience?
Well, what it does tell me is that organisations are not clear on what their customer experience is, particularly for their frontline staff. They are besotted with digital, with apps, with websites, all these hard numbers. And then when they talk to, say, their contact center, and they say to their contact center, hey, how do I know you're doing a good job? The contact center will do what's called post-call survey work, which we've all been invited to do. You know, stay on the line, answer this question. Net promoter score, why did you give that? Just about every contact center we deal with has a plus 50 or more net promoter score. They're all fantastic. So the person in charge of marketing or sales asks the person in charge of operations in the contact center, how are we going? They say, we've got a really good net promoter score. High fives, move on.
But it's been gamed somehow.
It has been gamed, okay? A perfect example of how it's been gamed. We've done work with a telco provider or an internet provider. They do net promoter score at the end of every call. 50% of their calls that come in, people are asking for a password reset. Now, that's very easy to do. Takes a couple of minutes, maybe a minute or so, and at the end, how would you rate us? Well, they all get 9 or 10s out of 10. Guess what happens to the overall NPS? It's fantastic. It's been gained. Take that information out, put it on an app or something like that to make it automated, okay, with all your two-factor authentication, whatever required. But then focus your NPS on the really high-quality interactions you're having with your customers and understand what you have to do to improve it. That's what should happen. Now, with the organizations, they look at that number and say, gee whiz, we've got a high NPS. It can't be the contact center. It can't be our emails. It can't be our chats. It's got to be something else. I would think that anyone who is in charge of growing a business would take a little bit of time out to say, I would like an independent assessment of what the experience is like in my organization, and either how does it compare against my peers, and more importantly, how does it compare against the rest of the market? I'm not going to ring my insurance company every day of the week, but I am going to be talking to my bank or my telco or something like that. I will benchmark that experience for success, ease, and sentiment based on either on the everybody else that I talk to. And that's going to set a framework. And leadership should be very clear about that and make sure that everyone is crystal clear about what the experience should look like.
While you're talking about what the experience should look like, what does a bad example of what you mean? Why are these scores sitting around 49.9? So what is typically going on in there, Paul, that is keeping that figure, basically line ball?
That's a good question. What we see is, you may know and everybody knows, your core can be monitored for coaching and training purposes. Mm-hmm. We look at like 100 of these every month of different quality assurance frameworks, okay? Most of the quality assurance is driven by what we call governance. And rightly, and there's a need for that governance. When you call up, the agent will say to you, ask you the three secret questions or ask for your account number or something like that. That is pretty much what we see the majority of the quality assurance work that has been done to do it. We see very little evidence of the actual experience, measuring the experience for a couple of reasons. It's actually the soft issues. How did I feel? How well did the person listen to me? How did they match the tone of my voice? How did they use cues and things like that? That's not an easy thing to measure. Very easy to measure, did you ask for the account number? So that becomes the primary focus of the quality assurance.
So, Paul, what does a bad or a suboptimal experience look like that keeps giving us this flat line of 49.9? Give us a couple of examples of where these companies are falling short.
Yeah, sure, Paul. So a good example would be in the automotive sector, where some of the manufacturers have decided to outsource their contact center or shut down their contact center and send all the calls to their distributors to answer the call based on the region. That's fine, and the distributor does it. What they don't understand is the person answering that call at the distributor does not have any sufficient training or, more importantly, a framework to think about what a great customer experience looks like. So what happens is, from our research, has been that typically people will ring up to organise a demonstration of a car, and they get such a poor experience at the front desk, they decided, I'm not going ahead with it. Okay. Now, the automotive company, everyone's got CRMs and databases and all that, but they haven't taken the time to help the frontline person understand what a good experience looks like, give them a very simple framework to think about, train them and keep the training very, very focused. That hasn't happened.
And I think, interesting, and I think you argue as well, though, that it's also the nature of outsourced call centers full stop, which are also contributing to this problem, Paul. What do you mean by that?
Well, outsourced call centers over the years have traditionally been seen as a cost base. Now, with that, all the organizations that are providing outsourced call centers focus on minimizing the cost per call. Okay. What that means is that the measurements they have in place are around what I call hard numbers, abandonment rate, like people not getting through to the contact center, what might be called duration. These are hard numbers. Only recently have we seen any move to satisfaction surveys at the end of the phone call with the outsourced call centers, or even other measures like first contact resolution, which is an important measure that ties in with the success element of our three-pillar approach.
I want to go to that first contact resolution bit because it sounds like a big bunch of words, but it's actually very important because I think you say there's quite a bit of wait time tolerance, say, in a contact center.
if the customer query gets resolved, there's actually some more patients there than we think.
Absolutely. Our research shows that depending on the scenario, okay, so if you're ringing up, inquiring into an organization, you can wait up to 13 minutes. And as long as you get a first contact resolution, you get an answer to your question, there is no difference between your customer satisfaction. So everybody had been measuring, answer the call in 20 seconds or whatever. Well, no, the focus should be give people a first contact resolution. It's a bit different. If you had a smash on the freeway, you want someone to answer the phone pretty quickly, and that's emergency services, completely different. But in the general sense, people need to understand what is the purpose of the call and what is the focus should be. Again, the three pillars. Success, did I get an answer?
The bigger play that's going on with outsourced contact centers, and what is happening there is there's quite a shift by some companies to do it differently, I think.
Superannuation is a great example. In the last couple of years, traditionally when superannuation started off, they outsourced their call centers because they were very focused on return on investment. Now what's happened is as the wave of baby boomers are coming through and looking for retirement and understanding it, that contact is such an important area for the organization to focus on. They're doing one of two things. They're bringing it back in-house and building their own contact centers with very sophisticated CRMs and the like, and they're going to be very successful. They are very successful. I think the likes of Aware and Spirit Super are two very good examples of what's happening there. Other call centers are saying, okay, my outsource partner isn't quite the partner I want, and I need to get a better partner. And we're seeing other organizations starting to look for different contact centers that have the flexibility to meet their needs and to be very much aligned with the superannuation organization.
And so one of the things I'm fascinated by, Paul, is, you know, we've seen the rise of chatbots and service bots, and is that working? And I think you talk about companies abandoning the speech analytics. So those two areas, chatbots aren't helping yet.
It's early days for both of them, really, as far as speech analytics is concerned. A number of organizations have jumped into it headlong and said, this is fantastic. We don't have to do quality assurance of 10% of our phone calls. We can now do with speech analytics 100% of the phone calls and be able to really nail down, triage what the issues are and improve the experience. What we found is what you see is not exactly what is happening, and many organizations have pretty much parked that for the moment until it gets more up to speed. It is machine learning, and they're going to learn and learn and learn, and they'll get better, but it isn't quite there yet.
And they've actually stopped using it.
Yeah, stopped using it. I mean, until it gets to a better position. I mean, it is a good triage tool, okay? Very good. You can understand, you can listen to it, and you can understand whether an agent is using the wrong sort of language or whatever in that situation or raising their voices. They're important things to cover off and make sure that you're getting a good experience. But it's the outliers. It's very much triage at the moment. It has a place to play, but it's nowhere near where they're espousing to be.
And chatbots?
Chatbots are getting there. I mean, if you look at some of them, like there's a lot of information or money that's gone into chatbots like Expedia. They do a very good chatbot, but other ones are still not quite there yet. And you'll find, I don't think I know the exact number, but I think about 50% of people that go on chatbots do end up ringing up and talking to a human being.
Right.
You could say I've lost 50% of my calls, but let me be very clear. The number of calls to the call centres in Australia have not declined in the 7 years. They've been the same, and that's the same around the world.
Surely the whole digital transformation stuff, there is much more volume going into those digital properties now. How does it work?
Oh, right. So what's happening is that people are using these new, either the web or the app or whatever, but they have got a propensity that they're not getting the answers they want and they want to talk to someone. So even though the volume is going down in terms of people ringing up for the easy questions, they're still getting more calls on the harder questions. Makes sense? I mean, and then what's also happening within the industry is a lot of those easy questions have been solved by the website or in the chat, but the harder questions are going into a contact center. Now, the contact center industry in Australia has a churn rate of about 25%. That is people coming and going 25%. On average, it costs you $20,000 to employ a person in a contact center. You're moving one in four all the time, okay? So therefore, you're bringing in more products, you're making the questions and the inquiries more complex. So you've got to train people up more to make it happen. And they've got to then be able to give a good experience while they're meant to be doing, while they're learning the product.
Yeah, that's the human side of it. What's the breakdown, Paul, in terms of how customers are coming into a company via what channels?
In person, okay, people coming in person in the last 4 years has dropped about 8%, from about 42% to 34%.
So 34% of customer inquiries are in person at a retail level or where they can, at a branch?
At a retail or whatever level, that's dropped, yeah. Now that's dropping. So what are they doing? Of course, well, they're going to the website, and that's growing by about 1 or 2%. The phone is the same; it's about 16%.
What's the website?
The website's around 25%
of all contact.
Yeah, over the phone is around 16-17%. Email in the last 4 years, email has gone from 6.5% to 11%. Okay, apps have gone from 3% to 6%. Web chat, 1 to 2, 2.5%. So that's happening, okay? That's text, those ones, social media posts, they're all like 1%. It's noise in the scheme of things.
So that makes there's complexity there. There's multiple channels going on. What's your sense on those other channels delivering on the experience, Paul? I know you're focused in this data on contact centers, but do you think it's different in those other channels?
We're focused on contact centers, email, and chat, because typically those three come from a contact center. They're the interactions that they're picking up. Some do social media, but social media is 1%. Here's where the action is. It's in the contact center, the chat, and the website. That's where you've got to get the experience right. That's where you've got to have crystal clear understanding of the type of experience you want. We do work in the education sector with future students. The most important thing in future students when they're assessing to come to Australia or coming to a university in Australia, particularly from overseas, they will rely on email or chat for the communication because the English isn't quite their first language. You have to make sure that that person, when they're communicating across those channels, can feel, and it's not as easy as on the phone, but they can feel that the person is listening to them. If someone says, if you are planning to come to our university, you know, I'd be interested to know what hobbies or interests you have because we've got these facilities to help you. If it's a religious or if it's art or whatever it is, we can help you. That's better than saying you have to get a grade of X, Y, Z to come to our university and it's going to cost you this amount of money. You can see the difference in how someone engages with you in that. Universities, people say, why are universities providing great experiences at the moment? In the future student channel, why are they providing great experiences? Because you're going to be paying between $10,000 and $400,000 for a course in Australia. That's more than most cars. It's almost like a building cost almost, a deposit. You want to have a great experience. This is such a critical touch point that they've focused on. And some of the universities like Western Sydney are doing it and getting it right.
Well, let's go there because we've heard about the challenges, but how about what good does look like, Paul? Who's doing it well and why? Maybe some sectors and companies, if you can mention them, but what they are doing to get it right.
We see education is doing it right. They've got onto it. They've understood that they need to provide a great experience with that channel that is future students, very important channel. We see water companies doing it, water retailers. Now, they are a monopoly. Why would you see them doing well?
And are they really? Well, utilities are actually picking their game up. Wow, there you go.
Picking their game up. Why are they doing it? In the water sector, the Essential Services Commission in Victoria about 8 years ago brought in a framework to say, we want you as water utilities, there's 15 water retailers in Victoria, We want you to be able to provide a better value for money experience for the community. And when you come to us, the water retailers go to the government and they say, we want to put a price rise up in the next 5 years or whatever. The government has said, well, you've not only got to talk about the hard numbers here, like you're going to put in more pipes and pumps. We want you to talk about the actual experience, the value for money you're going to provide the community, and we want you to measure that and get it right. We want you to communicate and engage more with your communities and build trust in your communities, and that'll be part of your price submission.
Right, so it's a government big stick incentive there, though.
Yeah, they've got an incentive, and say you've got to demonstrate it, and then you can put the price up or whatever, or maintain the price. Now, IPART in New South Wales is just following suit on that as well. So that's why we're seeing the reflection of the government doing what they're saying, putting in place, listen to your community and be more engaged in your community. That's what we see within why the water sector is going well.
Banking, telco, you cover banking, telco, auto, super, utilities are among that lineup of sectors you're covering. Can I ask how banking and telcos are going?
Well, not too good. They're a bit below the average of 50%. And so what's happening there? I mean, telcos, Telstra, I think have brought back a lot of their contact centres to Australia. I think that will have a positive impact on it. As far as banking is concerned, we do see the regional banks like a Bendigo or People's Choice, they're the ones that are really doing very well, got great customer experience in getting it right. The bigger banks, not so much at the moment.
This is a little perplexing for me because certainly, you know, we cover a lot of what the big banks are doing in a customer context. And, you know, Combank's are what I would perceived to be an outlier in that it looks like it's joining the dots between, you know, masses of customer data, contact centers, the app, its digital properties. They're all lining up, and you hear that, you know, CommBank is much more advanced than the other three in terms of its IT and infrastructure. But CommBank's not. How's CommBank going?
I'm glad you asked that question. Really, they're pretty much middle of the pack. We measure 13 odd banks. CommBank is pretty much in the middle of the pack. The ease is just not there. They still haven't got the focus on making it easy for a customer. What do I mean by that? It's saying here are the next steps you need to do when you're going down this path. If you're going for a home loan or whatever, articulating what is the next steps there. And same with success and sentiment, pretty much middle of the pack there as far as a bank's
concerned. Right. And so that's where you're saying the regional banks are at the top of that list. And what are their scores, Paul, versus what's at the bottom? 27, I think, was your bottom number.
The regional banks are up around 40-45% in ease, above 60 in sentiment and success. So they're doing a good job, relatively speaking. I mean, the average score there is still the best bank is doing around 54%.
Mm.
Is that a great score? I don't think so. If I was running a bank, I would be saying, how do we get to 80%? How do we get to 80%? What's mean if you get 80%? Well, it means you're going to demonstrate you're listening to the customer. It means that you're going to make it easy for them and you can provide them a first contact resolution.
What's at the bottom of that chart, Paul? Which banks are the laggards?
ANZ, I suppose, Teachers Mutual, they're the ones that are near the bottom of it. I don't really like to focus on the bottom. When you see our reports, we like to focus on who's doing best, and people should be aspiring to who's doing best and saying, I want to be best in class here. What do I have to do?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's the journo bit in me, isn't it? Asking for the, you know, the high drama bit.
I know. And but yeah, look, I would, so my proper answer to that is, look, I don't really want to focus on who's doing worst. I would like to say who's doing best, not only in the banking sector, but who's doing best outside the banking sector. What about this? Why don't you ring up some of those companies that are in our top 10 and see what the experience is like, and then ring your own organisation and then say, well, what do you notice between the two?
What are in your top, what is, so let's go there. Let's say if you want to talk, Happy Feet, let's do it. So who are the best performers overall then, Paul? And I think we might hear some surprises on that.
If you are a local government and you want to know who is doing it well in local government, Nillumbik have done a great job.
Can I just be really clear? You're talking about a local government or a local council topping the overall customer experience charts?
Yes.
I need to move there.
There's a lot of work that's gone behind that. They have a look at their website, have a look at their customer service strategy. Very clear, very easy to understand. Everybody in the organization is clear on it. They're getting scores around 82%.
Wow.
Homeschooling is a TAFE college. Again, they've worked very hard getting people to get into the TAFE college and study there is important. They've really worked hard on that. The next three are universities. We've got Massey University in New Zealand, Australian National University, Deakin University. These people are in the top 10 at the moment.
Okay, so just to be clear, in the top 10 of all the companies you're tracking,
200
companies you're tracking, there's actually no major brands in there. They're universities, councils. There's a water utility in Melbourne Water I can see now that I'm looking at the list, and Barwon Water. So there's no brands in the top 10, Paul. Where do the brands kick in?
So the brands kick in really around in the top 20. The likes of Spirit Super is in there as the best super brand. Then we come down to the 30s where we start to see organizations. People's Choice comes in the top. People's Choice is one of the brands that is coming in. You're getting Westpac coming in. Is really starting to come in around the 50s. That's what it looks like. It's not really until you get past 50.
Yeah, and let's sort of just run, I mean, some of those core sort of categories where the big competitive plays are going on. Telco's a really interesting one. You've got Aussie Broadband at one, iiNet at two, Optus at three, Telstra at four, TPG at five. When was the last time you did this data? Because Optus is at number three ahead of the others. That's an interesting little curveball.
Yeah, well, I would think that recent events have certainly got them focused on the customer and trying to improve the experience. Yeah, they've worked very hard to get to that position, absolutely.
I can see banking in your top five overall. People's Choice, as you said, Westpac's number two, Bendigo three, Suncorp four, Bank Vic 5. So there's a couple of the big four that are missing in that one. And then when we get to automotive, Toyota top, then Kia, Hyundai, Lexus, Nissan, all sort of that's the rankings for customer experience. But in the end, Paul, we'll just zip back to as we sort of wrap this up. In the end, what we're talking about here is it's actually the universities, utilities that are way outplaying sort of the commercial brand plays on this, right? That's the overall theme in here.
Yes, that's the overall theme, and there's reasons behind it. The local government, years ago, you may or may not remember, Jeff Kennett decided, and that's going back 20-odd years, Jeff Kennett decided he wanted to measure the customer experience of every council. And so all 79 councils in Victoria every year you'd have to do their customer service satisfaction score. And that's played out in a real focus on customer experience across the council sector.
In some of those top performers, like what are they doing that's giving them, I know the sort of the three pillars you talk about, but on the ground, in the unit, in the contact centre, what is different about what they're doing that is breaking, it's seeing them sort of break from the pack?
Yeah, first of all, the leadership have got a very clear understanding of what a good or great experience looks like, and they can articulate it. You just have to look at Disney overseas and how much effort they put on to focus on the experience at every touch point and the clarity that that has. That is what we see as paramount. Secondly, the amount of effort these organizations put into training their frontline staff is a high priority. You have to take the time out to help them understand what a great experience looks like and coach and train and give them feedback so they can give a great experience. All these people want to give a great experience at the front line. No one wants to come to work to do a bad job. They want to do a good job. You provide a framework for them to think about. That's what they're doing. Third thing is that they are engaging everybody in the organization where we're going. So a good example is if we are trying to get everybody to use the app, okay, if somebody rings up from an organization, the first question they should say, or one of the questions they should say is, have you downloaded our app? And if they say no, we'll say, look, if you get a chance, so you get your phone, then maybe download it. If they don't have time, or if they do say, yes, I have, and they say, now, on the top of the app, in the top right corner, you'll see blah, blah, blah. At the end of the call, the clarity they want is someone says, at the end of the call, that was easy. I don't know why I called you in the first place. I did not know the app was there. Okay? That's how, but I can't think of one organization that I've spoken to more recently that has said, have you downloaded the app? Where's the app? What do I do? Okay? I don't need the app. I don't want the app. Have you looked at our website? That's what smart organizations are doing, is linking, here's my CX strategy to what the front line should be doing.
Super interesting stuff, Paul. And so let's wrap this up really with so your final takeouts and watchouts around customer experience, contact centers, systems, the deployment of customer tech to make things better. What are your big call outs to the market, to the industry on this?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. My big takeout is, with all this investment in the technology, it is paramount that you involve the front line in what's going on with the deployment. Their ability, because they're talking to the customers every day, can give some fantastic feedback as to where the focus should be. They're the ones they are the canary in the coal mine. Keep them involved in that program. Secondly, with all this technology deployment, you need to be clear as to what success looks like. Very clear what success looks like, and you have to understand to get the right exception reporting in place. What do I mean by exception reporting? If you have only 50% of your customers with a mobile phone number, you need to understand how I can get to 100% of customers with a mobile phone number, so that's what I need to do. That's the important thing that will help us do it. Be very clear on what exception reporting is happening. Thirdly, don't underestimate the burden that you're putting on the business when you're increasing these channels, putting an app in place, putting a website, plus a call center. We are increasing the amount of touch points, and it's making it harder and harder to get a consistent experience across all touch points. You need to work very hard to get that consistent experience across all touch points. And my final thought here is, as consumers, we all have a role to play here. If you are going to contact an organization by phone, email, or chat, make sure you've got your account number details in front of you. Make sure that you don't call on a Monday morning, because everybody does. And finally, treat the person on the other end of the line like a human being, because they are. And if you're a person at the other end of the line and someone treats you with respect, then guess what? They're going to treat you back with respect, or give you more, and help you solve your queries.
So I've got to suppress my crankiness when something happens with a company that doesn't do what I want. I've got to come in very friendly anyway, and I will get better service. Thanks for the tip, Paul. I'll be a good customer from now on. Good stuff, Paul. And I think what we should do is, in maybe 6 months, or actually maybe set the alarm, Paul, when you see the rise in the flat line, you go, we've cracked the code here. Let's have another conversation. Paul van Beenendaal, thanks for your data, your perspective. Thanks for joining, Paul.
Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you for your time. Greatly appreciate it.
This MI3 audio edition was presented by Paul McIntyre. That's moi. Producer Nick Slater. Music by Matt Dwyer. For more episodes, go to listener.com or download the Listener app and search MI3 audio edition to listen for free. Listener.